Hello and welcome. You're listening to me, Alice, on the Backtracker History Show podcast. Join me as we go delving through the archives to find out about people, places and events that happened in the past. These were stories that were big news in their day, but are largely forgotten now. Most of these podcasts have been specially edited from a Bradley Stoke radio show in Bristol, England. And one of the great things about this podcast is that I can go into more detail about each story because there are no time constraints. And it's really easy to show your support just by spreading the word, leaving reviews, and sharing with all your family and friends. It really does help. If you want to get in touch with me with show ideas, comments, or information, you can via Twitter or Facebook by using @BacktrackerUK with a capital B, capital T and a capital UK, or emailing me at info@backtracker.co.uk. Now, on with the show. Today's Surrey tale occurred in the year 1893, but what else happened that year that contributed to the social, political and cultural landscape of the United Kingdom? Well, on the 13th of January, the Independent Labour Party had its first meeting in Bradford after local and national dissatisfaction with the Liberals' apparent reluctance to endorse working-class candidates representing the interests of the majority. A sitting independent MP and prominent union organiser, Keir Hardie, became its first chairman. On the 10th of August, Preston, Lancashire enters the United Kingdom weather records with the highest 5-minute total rainfall of 32 millimetres. And as of August 2018, this record remains. On the 13th of October, the first students enter St Hilda's College in Oxford, founded for women by Dorothea Beale. The 26th of November sees Arthur Conan Doyle surprising the reading public by revealing in the story The Adventure of the Final Problem, published in the December issue of the Strand magazine, that his character Sherlock Holmes had apparently died at the Reichenbach Falls on the 4th of May, 1891. And lastly, the 16th of December sees the establishment in Yorkshire of the Bronte Society, possibly the oldest literary society of this nature, dedicated to establishing what will become the Bronte Parsonage Museum. But our event occurred in Oak Ridge near Stroud, when a father and son had a fatal argument. At the Gloucestershire Assizes on Tuesday the 28th of November 1893, before Mr. Justice Cave, Frederick Windham, alias Frederick Window, a butcher aged 45, was charged with murdering his father, James Windham, at Bisley on October the 19th. Mr. Bosanquet QC and Mr. C. Griffith prosecuted and Mr. James defended. The court was crowded with people wanting to see the accused in this highly publicised case. The family involved were highly respected and well known, and so this was a shock to the local community. The accused pleaded not guilty, and he only showed any emotion when his sister gave evidence. The whole sorry tale started about 3 years before, when the deceased, James Windham, who was 72 years of age, lost his wife, and shortly afterwards hired a housekeeper, a married woman called Virtue Mills, who was thought by the prisoner to have overridden his father's affection for his own family. In fact, James had retorted in an argument with Windham that Virtue Mills was
the biggest whore I could get my hands on.
Word of the week.
And your word this week is scurrilous, which often describes language that contains obscenities, abuse, or especially slander. That is, a false statement, damaging a person's reputation. Scurrilous can also describe someone who uses or tends to use scurrilous language. This word originated from Middle French word scurril, which comes ultimately from the Latin noun scurra, meaning buffoon or jester. Samuel Johnson, an 18th century lexicographer, defined scurrilous as using such language as only the license of a buffoon could warrant. The murdered man, James Wyndham, farmed a considerable quantity of land at Frampton Place in Oak Ridge, near Stroud, a farm not far from the Great Western Main Line, between Gloucester and London, and near the Sapperton Tunnel. On October the 19th, in 1893, Wyndham and Mr. William David Farrer, a coal merchant in Stroud, who employed Wyndham as a bailiff, had arranged to meet at Stroud, then drive over to his father's place to do some shooting. And so, accompanied by Farrer's brother, they drove to Bisley. On the way, they called at the local pub, the New Inn, where Wyndham's sister, Susan, was staying. And they started chatting, and the subject turned to the allegation that their father had tried to run Susan over. It would appear a lawyer's letter had been sent to the father following the incident, and after this conversation, Wyndham got quite angry and irritated with his father. The group then drove on towards Bisley and stopped for more refreshments at the Butcher's Arms in Oak Ridge. They left their trap at the inn and went on the land of the prisoner's father and saw James Wyndham with some of his men digging potatoes. They walked across to where his father was, but Wyndham, still being angry after the conversation with his sister, wasn't really inclined to talk to his father. But eventually he did, and his father accused him of being drunk. That's when Wyndham replied that he was not. Wyndham's friends, the Farrers, decided it might be a good time to take him away before him and his father came to blows. So they stepped in between the quarrelsome pair and decided to escort Wyndham out of the field. The father unlatched the gate, and they proceeded through it. Then the prisoner returned, got into another argument with his father regarding Mrs. Mills, the housekeeper. As his father approached him, Wyndham uttered,
"I will shoot the—"
and promptly aimed the gun.
Word on the street.
And today we go to the very well-known area of Stokes Croft in BS2. Originally the croft or enclosure of John Stoke, who lived in Redcliffe Street and was married three times. He was mayor in 1832 and is buried in the chapel of the Blessed Mary in the parish of St. Thomas. And this road became a centre of industry during the mid-19th century, including the carriage works. The area was damaged by aerial bombing during the Bristol Blitz in World War II, and then there were plans to widen it as part of the A38. Now, though, it's a vibrant area of art and music and cultural lifestyles, with a huge range of restaurants and activities to hand. Banksy's 1999 mural, The Mild, Mild West, is right there at number 80 Stokes Croft. Frederick Wyndham shot his father at close range, first striking him in the neck, a wound severe enough to be instantly fatal. But despite this, the father remained standing, prompting the prisoner to fire again, this time hitting him in the chest, and with a shot that would likely have proven fatal on its own. Afterwards, he joined his companions in the trap and asked to be taken to his sister's location before surrendering himself. Once he was with his sister, he confessed to murdering their father for her sake, and expressed that he was ready to face the consequences. He then turned himself into the authorities at Bisley Police Station, where instead of feeling any remorse for what he had done, he declared,
"I have only done my duty. I solemnly declare I shot him. I put two barrels into him. I hope he's dead. I can die happy."
At the Gloucester Assizes, Mr. James set up the defence of insanity, but the judge said there was no evidence to substantiate this. During the proceedings, when it was time for Virtue Mills, the housekeeper, to testify, Wyndham continued showing his hatred for the woman by interrupting her with threats and insults. The jury started their deliberations at 1:30 p.m. and in 2 minutes, without leaving the box, returned a verdict of guilty. The prisoner, who had remained seated during the trial, was now told to stand up, and a warder stood either side of him to support him if necessary. But Wyndham never needed them. He just stood there, apparently unmoved, facing the judge. And so the clerk of the arraigns started the final procedure.
Prisoner at the bar, you stand convicted of the willful murder of one James Wyndham. What have you to say why the court should not give you judgment to die according to law?
I should like to kill the woman, sir.
As you can imagine, this statement caused the court to erupt, and the judge had to forcibly call for silence in the room so the crier could announce that the death sentence was about to be passed. Once that was achieved, the official placed the black cap on the judge's head, and the prisoner exclaimed,
"She was the cause of all of it,"
pointing towards the housekeeper, Virtue Mills. The murder of James Wyndham shocked the local community and garnered significant media attention due to the family's prominent position in the area. It serves as a tragic reminder of the consequences of family disputes and the devastating impact of violence within communities. His Lordship the Judge then addressed the prisoner as follows.
Frederick Wyndham, you have been found guilty upon the very clearest evidence of the murder of your father. And if the jury had found any other verdict, they would have been manifestly false to the oaths which they had taken and false in their duty to their country.
Quite right, Lord.
Whatever may have been the merits of the dispute between you and your sister on the one hand, and your father on the other, I know not. It is not, of course, for me to judge between you and whatever the conduct of your father may have been. It does not justify you or excuse you in taking his life in the way in which you did. He was an old man, 72 years of age and unarmed, when you deliberately shot him, and shot him so suddenly as not to give him an opportunity to repent. Now the law which your life is justly fortified will not treat you in like manner. You will have some time given to you to repent of what you have done, and I trust you will turn that time to the best advantage.
I shall not repent for killing him.
In the meantime, there is but one duty for me to perform, and that is to pass sentence of death upon you. The sentence of the court is that you be taken hence to the place from whence you came, and from thence to the place of execution, and that you there hanged by the neck until you be dead, and that your body be afterwards buried within the precinct of the prison in which you shall last have been confined previous to and after your conviction, and may the Lord have mercy on your soul.
Thank you, my Lord.
During the judge's speech, many people in court were visibly affected. Wyndham was then taken below to the cells, and as he was going down the steps, he turned around, looking at the gallery, and said,
"Goodbye, all of you."
Mrs. Mill, the murdered man's housekeeper, the woman Wyndham expressed such hatred towards, was in court during the trial, and after the conclusion of the case was mobbed when people started recognising her as she left the Shire Hall. She was initially planning on visiting some friends on the outskirts of the city, but a mob, composed mainly of women, hustled her about so much that when she reached Barton Crossing, she sought refuge in a signal box. The police and a passing clergyman took compassion on her and dispersed the mob, escorting her to the railway station. I went to Gloucester Prison a few years ago, and I have to say the condemned cell is much nicer than the others. It's in the oldest part of the jail and is reached by a very narrow staircase, where you can't walk two side by side. So when Wyndham was taken to his cell, there was a warder in front and one directly behind him. At the top of the stairs is a small landing, which opens into a large room for the use of the day and night guard in charge of the condemned convicts. This room only had a table and bench and was lit by a large window, which can be seen from the barrack yard. At the time, the weather was quite cold, so a stove was kept well replenished with fuel and faced the door of the cell. In the right and left-hand corners are the condemned cells, neither of which had a window, and both were equally cheerless. An open doorway separated from the guardroom by an iron grating, which is kept locked during the prisoner's stay. As the fateful day begins, Thursday, the 21st of December, 1893, the relatively spacious yard had in one corner a heap of weathered bricks, while in another, a mound of earth serves as a sombre indicator of a freshly dug grave. At the far end of the yard stood the scaffold, a stark and unadorned structure comprising two sturdy uprights and a crossbar, positioned over a concealed pit. The platform atop the pit split into two parts, held aloft by a lever mechanism. Dangling from the crossbar hung the rope, its length meticulously measured by the executioner beforehand, taking into account the weight and height of the condemned man. John Billington, the appointed hangman, is accompanied by his assistant, William Warbrick. Upon their arrival at the cell, the county high sheriff surrenders the culprit to their custody and respectfully withdraws, leaving Wyndham's hands bound behind his back. The tolling of the prison bell, along with the chiming of St. Nicholas Church, signals the commencement of the solemn procession towards the scaffold. To all those present, Wyndham said,
"I wish you all goodbye. I should like to have killed that bitch before I died."
This last statement on the scaffold after shaking the hands of his executioner was the regret that he hadn't killed the whore, Virtue, as well. This terrible farewell was uttered without semblance of fear, and without any assistance from Billington, Wyndham placed himself on the scaffold, towing the chalk line marked there by the executioner. The rope was placed around his neck, the cap over his head, and then the lever was pulled, and it was all over. As Wyndham weighed 12 stone and a drop of 6 feet was given, it was sufficient and death was instantaneous. Incidentally, according to the Times of October the 21st, Frederick Wyndham himself had once applied for the job of a hangman.
Light the candles, get yourself a fresh cup of something hot or a glass of something chilled, and settle back to enjoy a selection of 100% spoiler-free book reviews. Whether you're a fan of cozy mysteries, horror, romantic comedies, science fiction, or anything else you might find on the bookcase, being bookish is a great place to start. Join me, your host Ray, as I take a joyride through the books on my bookshelves and journey into new territories with recommendations every week. You may even hear a few interviews with authors along the way. Find every episode of Being Bookish wherever you find your podcasts.
In the news today, boffins in Bristol University have discovered that an astronaut's favourite part of a computer is a spacebar.
Back in the day facts.
And so, this week we start with the 30th of March 1856 and the Treaty of Paris, which is signed, ending the Crimean War. The war had started in October 1853 between the Russian Empire and an ultimately victorious alliance of the Ottoman Empire, France, the United Kingdom and Sardinia, Piedmont. On the 31st of March 1939, events preceding World War II in Europe see Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain pledging British military support to the Second Polish Republic in the event of an invasion by Nazi Germany. On the 1st of April 1984, on the day before his 45th birthday, singer Marvin Gaye is shot to death by his father, Marvin Gaye Sr., at their house in Western Heights, Los Angeles, after an argument. Gaye Sr. later pleaded no contest to voluntary manslaughter and received a 6-year suspended sentence and 5 years of probation. On the 2nd of April, 1982, Argentina invades the Falkland Islands, followed by the invasion of South Georgia the next day. And then on the 5th of April, the British government dispatches a naval task force to engage the Argentine Navy and Air Force before making an amphibious assault on the islands. The conflict lasted 74 days and ended with an Argentine surrender on the 14th of June, returning the islands to British control. In total, 649 Argentine military personnel and 255 British military personnel and 3 Falkland Islanders were killed during the hostilities. On the 3rd of April 1913, British suffragette Emmeline Pankhurst is sentenced to 3 years in jail for incitement to place an explosive in a building in Walton. The 4th of April 1968 sees Martin Luther King Jr. assassinated by James Earl Ray at a motel in Memphis, Tennessee. King was an American Christian minister, activist and political philosopher who was one of the most prominent leaders in the civil rights movement from 1955 until his assassination. A black church leader and a son of early civil rights activist and minister Martin Luther King Sr., King advanced civil rights for people of colour in the United States through the use of non-violent resistance and non-violent civil disobedience against Jim Crow laws and other forms of legalised discrimination. And lastly, on the 5th of April 1923, Firestone Tire and Rubber Company starts producing inflatable tyres. Well, I'm afraid that signals the end of today's show. But don't worry, because I'll be here, same time, same place, next week. And before I go, a huge thanks has to go out to those who really brought today's stories to life. And this week we have Joe Wilson, Steve Yeo and Molly Jeffries from St. Stephen's Drama Group in Bristol, as well as Bradley Stoke Radio's very own Steve Shepherd. Thank you, one and all. Thank you once again for listening to me, Alice, on the Backtracker History Show. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can find me on Twitter or Facebook by looking up at Backtracker UK with a capital B, a capital T and a capital UK. I also occasionally post onto TikTok and Instagram. So do come along and find me, because it's amazing to hear from you and get some feedback or even ideas for future shows. As a small independent podcaster, your help and support is always appreciated. And one way you can do that is to rate the show wherever you get your podcasts. Leaving a review also helps, as it gives other people an idea of what the show's about. The show is regularly released on Mondays. So until next time, guys, take care and look after each other.